Two personalities debating today's biggest geek topics. This is Project Nerds Versus.
Hey, pro nerds. Welcome back to Versus. It's me, Iggy, and I'm here with Tyler. What's up, Tyler?
What is happening, Iggy? How are you? You
beautiful nerds.
Let's do it.
We took it off a couple weeks ago. Busy world right now. But we're back, and there is so much going on. I feel like this week, every time we started to make our list of things to talk about, we had a new link to share. So much so that I just barely put at the end of this list for us to just answer in the quick hits the details of Pierce Brosnan now being Dr. Fate. So that's what kind of week.
Dr. Fate.
I know. That's what kind of week it's been, though. So I guess without further ado, if you're ready to dive in, I'm ready to dive in.
Let's do some topics. Let's do it.
All right. Let's head on down the list. Let's get started with what everybody's talking about this week. Everybody everywhere. The infamous Snyder Cut finally debuted last week. It was huge. It was a huge, critics certified it fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, at least for a while. I think it's fallen down into the high 70s now. And fans on the internet, especially Twitter, have sang its praises. I will say that for sure. I sat through it. I had to split it up amongst 2 hours. I don't know if you've had time. I know you know enough about it. Hopefully you've seen pieces because we got to talk about it. Was it really that much better than the original release? What do you think, Tyler?
I mean, is that the question? Was it better than the original release?
Yeah,
I mean, the answer to that is yes, but with so many conditions. I don't know. It's hard to talk about now. And like, I'm definitely on record as being not a huge fan of Zack Snyder's work in the DCU. Not a fan of anything that DCU's done, just as far as like, there's some of the movies I really enjoy, but just as a whole, it's just misstep after misstep. But I don't know. Is it better than the version of Justice League that we got 4 years ago? 100% unequivocally, yes. That's not a high bar. It definitely clears it with room to spare. But at the same time, I mean, it's so hard. There's just so much to unpack with it. I mean, for one, we have to stop pretending like this is the movie we would have gotten if Zack Snyder hadn't had all the personal tragedy befall his family and had to leave the movie. This is not the movie he was making, nor would have made. There was no one at Warner Brothers who's going to let Zack Snyder release a 4-3 aspected 4-hour movie into theaters. Was not going to happen. And like a lot of the positives I've heard about it are some of those ones where it just comes down to a matter of like, well, they filled out so much more backstory for this character and this character and this character. My answer to that is I would hope so. It's 4 hours long. Like, what else are you going to put in it? It definitely felt like, so I should preface this. I did watch it. And I enjoyed big chunks of it. And like, there were a lot of really good fixes to it, but it's just like, I don't know. I mean, how much credit do you get for, One thing I will say is I am now curious to see what movie Zack Snyder would have released had he not been forced to leave production because of the tragedy befalling his family. Cause I'm actually curious about that movie. This is obviously not that movie. I don't believe any, there's a ton of stuff that's in this that I know would not have been in his original cut, whether it be weird stuff with the Joker or throw. I mean, they definitely felt like they definitely went the kitchen sink approach with the Snyder cut between Darkseid and Deathstroke and Joker. And like, this is the last hurrah. I'm going to throw literally everything I can at it, see what happens. But I am curious to have seen the movie he would have made. I don't know that it would have. I believe now, having seen this cut, I believe that Zack Snyder could have made a better movie than the one that Joss Whedon finished. But I don't know. How much credit do you get for 5 years after the? I mean, they started filming this almost 5 years ago. The original.
Right.
How much credit do you get for going back and refilming a bunch of stuff, recutting it, redoing effects, throwing a bunch of stuff at it, and like also having the hindsight of like, well, here's all the things people hated about it for 5 years, like. I get to correct all those mistakes. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to shit on it because it is cool, but it just feels like, I don't know. It feels gratuitous. It feels like the worst kind of fan service-y. Like, it's like, I don't know. I think the people who like were clamoring for this secret version of this made me, I was already soured on it before it came out, to be honest, but it is, but unequivocally, it is 100% better than the version of Justice League that I sat through 4 years ago. How about that?
Right. So the underlying question, I agree with you. It is better. There's a lot that you, and you could tell, we probably need a whole podcast, maybe a whole podcast series dedicated to this, because there is a lot to unpack. I am going to go as far as to say it was way better. I enjoyed it, like thoroughly enjoyed it. To me, though, I agree with you on the part to where exactly this was not his movie, and he had the advantage to have heard everything that everybody disliked about the other one to go back and fix that, like you mentioned. But I felt if you cut out some of that slow-mo, because 10% of the movie is in slow-mo.
That's so much slow-mo.
It is. And if you cut out some of that and you knock out some of the fat, maybe even trim up a little bit of the backstory, I think you have a really solid movie here.
You're saying it's a little bloated at 4 hours?
Yeah, a little bloated. A little bit. A little bit.
Could you use the term?
I liked it, though, and it was really important to watch with Erin, because she's not into this world, although she is downstairs playing Ghost of Tsushima right now, so she is getting into this world. But she appreciated it because she doesn't know the Flash. She knows, you know, people have heard of the Flash, people have heard of Cyborg. Everybody knows Batman's backstory, and we've always joked about no matter what movie, if Batman's even in it for a minute, we get his backstory as well. So it's the main characters he didn't, and they kind of gave us a little bit of time with that. I do think
did they give us Cyborg's backstory, or did, as you put it in a chat we had earlier, did they give us Black Iron Man's backstory?
Oh, that's very true. So Cyborg was transferred. If I was to complain about certain things, it's the Cyborg's depiction as Iron Man, basically, from the mask to when he's learning to fly to everything. However, I really liked Flash. I felt like Ezra Miller got to be a little bit more of what we were expecting him to be. Really curious, was that Iris? Like, you know, how that whole scene that was set up? So there were a lot of questions unanswered that have made me wonder what's next. And I'm going to tell you, so we watched through, I believe it's through the first four parts. So about an hour and 15 minutes on the first night. And then the last 2 hours and 10 to 15 minutes after on the second night. And that second night is, I would have probably, if the first night would have stayed course, I would have probably walked out, been like lukewarm on it, thought it was better. But that second night really won me over. And I think breaking it up won me over too, because watching it all at once, I probably would have been less excited. Am I going to sit through 4 hours of this again? Am I going to purchase it? Am I going to watch the black and white version? No. Did I really like this? Yes. Did I really want to see what was going to happen in that nightmare universe now? Hell yes. Like, that was amazing. I actually cannot believe I'm saying this. It actually sold me on seeing more of Leto as the Joker. I'm really interested now. I'm interested. So
first of all, I don't want to see Leto as anything anymore in any movie ever. But okay. I mean, I respect that opinion, and I definitely can see where you're coming from on it. I mean, I think the follow-up to it is this enough to like let Snyder have the keys of the kingdom back? And I still have to say no. Because if the only way he could be this successful is to come back 5 years later, start over again, and make it 4 hours long, then maybe you need someone else. Let's try again. Let's start over. And here's the thing: I'm 100% curious in this weird nightmare alternate universe that he's made. But like, I've never knocked Snyder on cool ideas with interesting concepts. I just don't believe he has the ability to execute it in a way that would be good.
Right. Well, to answer your Snyderverse question, the verse, I felt like, first of all, execs are, you know, what have you done for me lately? Short memory. I need you to make something for me now. It was booming. Like, the internet, I felt like, was talking, and people I didn't expect to see talking about it were talking about it. On Monday, I got on a call for work and people were talking about it. It was insane. But I did read that it didn't impact, one thing as bad as Wonder Woman 84 was, it impacted HBO's Max subscriptions. Apparently Snyderverse didn't do anything. And maybe it's because the people that would have been interested have already done it because of Wonder Woman, but apparently this did not bring in the money immediately that they were expecting to see from it.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people who may have originally been interested in it, not like the hardcore, but were turned off immediately by, it's how many hours long? So
half a work day, right? Perfect. So we could spend all the time in the world on it. We are going to do a Nerdcast next week, so I'm sure this will come up again and we can put a little more time into it. Let's go ahead and move on, as we do have, like I said, a lot of other things.
So many more. Let's talk other streaming, even other streaming superheroes. Disney has come around with the newest batch of movie pushbacks. Black Widow's been pushed back. Luke has been pushed back. What's the other one that's coming?
Cruella's
been pushed back. All their movies, their entire slate's been pegged, including Black Widow, has now been pushed back to July and will be same day and date on Disney Plus as in theaters, with the addendum of it being the Disney Plus premiere, where you have to pay the extra $30 to see it day of. They did this with Mulan, and then they also did it with Raya the Last Dragon.
Right.
So this will be the third time they've tried this. I think maybe a Marvel movie is the one that finally does it. I guess it seems like we were almost there. We were almost getting theaters open. And if Disney's the first domino to fall, they won't be the last. What is likely going to be the first next big release in theaters? Will it be a summer release, or are we going to see more delays and direct-to-streaming drops? Now, the big thing, these movies are coming out in theaters. It's just a matter of...
I think the big release,
What's going to be the big box office tentpole of the year?
So I'm scared shitless of more movies getting pushed back, and we'll get to that when we talk about Warner Brothers here in a few minutes because of their new deal. So I'm hoping by October stuff is not getting pushed back into 2022. I still think this could be, Black Widow could be the summer tentpole in July. We have so much up in the air, and we've talked about this previously. We've talked about it for months, actually. What we really, until May at this point, don't have a good forecast of what probably summer into early fall looks like. I feel like after May, we'll have a better way to forecast, and still with a lot of unpredictable pieces. I think Black Widow, but people are already getting tired. I bought movie tickets finally to go back to movie. It's buffered and everything like that. And I'm going to see Jurassic Park because I know it won't be packed. It's not a new release, but I feel like maybe by July, Black Widow could be that one. A big part of this, though, this will be officially now 2 years between Marvel release and theaters, a full 2 years, because Spider-Man was July 2019. So definitely interesting. I don't know. We talked about this in depth, I believe, on The Last Word, and you talked about Spider-Man No Way Home likely being the next big release in theaters anyways. Are you still on board with that, or are you seeing something different now?
I mean, I called it not necessarily as the first big release in theaters. I think Spider-Man might be the first movie to start hitting box office numbers like we were seeing 2 years ago. I definitely believe that we will have a big, $100 million in theaters movie this year. I just don't think we're going to see any $100 million opening weekends for another probably year. I would say that Black Widow is a good guess. I would say there is a there's 3 weekends in a row in July that each have a movie that I think could be the winner. Black Widow's right in the middle right now, pushed back to July 9th. The week after that is the new Space Jam.
Right.
And the week before that is, I think, the Dark Horse, the new Top Gun.
Okay. I'm so excited for Maverick. I'm still so excited.
Tom Cruise brings people to the movie theater, baby. And
That's true.
So I think one of those three could be the winner, but like you said, it wasn't the first. I mean, like, a lot of theaters have also pushed back mini movies. Like Free Guy just got pushed back again. There's a lot of stuff back there. So, but I believe that we will see. I think July will be the July will be the month that we see people really back in theaters again. We'll see. I don't know. I haven't bought a ticket yet. I would probably buy a ticket to one of those three, if all not three. Although today they announced the 10th anniversary re-release of Scott Pilgrim in Dolby.
Right.
I might break all the rules just to go see that again. So I don't know. We'll see.
Well, as of this past week, I am eligible for vaccinations here in Colorado. So I just got to get my paperwork in order. The movie tickets I bought are a month out. Like, you have to buy ahead a month. And I love the Draft House and all, but it makes sense why they had to, but we had to pick out our meals a month ahead already. Yeah. So I had to pick out all my food, and I was, it was tough.
I've been eligible for 2 weeks now and still have not been able to, like, the appointments go up and they go down 2 minutes later if you're not quick. So
right. So I think it's huge. We are in agreement here. I think July we could start to see, however we're defining it, some sort of norm, increased numbers, movies here. I don't think Space Jam. You mentioned a few of them. Space Jam, because the HBO Max Warner Brother thing is, it's free. You don't have to pay that extra. We have to pay for HBO, but you don't have to pay the $30 premium. So somebody like me with the kids is more likely to stay home for that one and then gamble all that month on Black Widow. So
I'll take that. That's true. So,
all right. Well, let's stick with the theaters. I mentioned it briefly. Warner Brothers, which we've talked about also across all of our podcasts, had a interesting 2021 approach of day and date on HBO Max for all their movies. And now I think to reverse course, we'll probably discuss what reasons we believe they struck a deal with Cineworld, who owns Regal here in the States, for a 45-day exclusive window. So that means every movie that comes out in 2022 will be at Regal for 45 days before it goes anywhere else. That likely includes any movies that get pushed to 2022. So again, Dune, stay put in October. But with this, I think there's a lot of things to unpack here as well. But I guess the big question is this a good call? Is this going to make theaters happy at them again? Or maybe even, because remember, it didn't just piss off theaters. It pissed off directors and the studios that they made these movies with. Was this an olive branch of sorts? What's the reasoning? Is this a good idea? Any of those questions, just answer something.
I don't know. There's so much to unpack here. I mean, when this first popped, like the first thing I said was like, well, that lasted all of a year. Like Warner Brothers didn't even make a year of their day and date HBO thing. And I think they did piss off a lot of companies, a lot of directors, a lot of production companies, specifically the legendaries of the world were like, no, you're going to do this. At the same time, an exclusivity deal with a single like owner of theaters is not what we were looking for. That's almost more terrifying than day of date and not getting to theaters. This reeks of Regal/Cineworld being insanely desperate to stay afloat. And I'm assuming that Warner Brothers got an insanely good deal from this. Like I think the usual cut that they were probably getting back in the day from Regal is not the same that they're getting on this deal. Like, it's one thing to have a 45-day window where you could show it in theaters. It's a whole other thing to be a 45-day window and you're the only chain of theaters that gets to show it. Like, there's going to be – there. I think – I have a feeling Warner Brothers made out like bandits on this deal, if I had to guess. I may be wrong. It's a mutually beneficial thing. But if I had to guess, this reeks of Cineworld and Regal being like, well, let's give it a shot. Like, we'll give you literally half of the game if you just let us show movies again, because we need to keep our doors open. So
I'm furious. So Cinnabar, which we always joked was the poor man's Alamo Draft House, it served food, kind of all that. They had a couple around here that were great. They didn't survive the pandemic of 2020. And the reason I bring that up is probably somewhere around 2017, 2018, Cineworld or Regal bought Cinnabar, and I would have had options. Now if I want to see a Warner movie in 2022, I can't use my Draft House pass. I can't go to the three AMCs that I have locally. I have to drive to downtown. So Tyler, the closest one to me is that 16th Street Mall right next to the convention center, that theater right there. That's the closest Regal I have that I would have to go see. So again, I'm going to mention this. If Dune was to say get pushed to next spring, I have to drive downtown to find, you know, and to find an evening to go downtown, won't get to use my pass, everything like that. Or I have to wait 6 to 7, like 45 days. I have to wait way too long for some of these movies. I'm angry about it. Whether I'm in agreement with you that it's a money thing, but I'm still just upset.
As angry as you think you are, I can top that, because obviously I live in the headquarters of AMC.
Right.
So every theater in town, with the exception of like Screen Armor and some ones that are like owned locally, every theater in town's at AMC. There is one Regal owned theater in the entire KC Metro, and it is located at the Ameristar Casino. So if I want to go see a movie that's from Warner Brothers in 2022, I have to drive all the way down north of the river to Ameristar. to see this theater. Go to the casino to see this movie.
What I would like to see, maybe there will be a twist here. What I would like to know more of is the possibility of some kind of deal being in there. So it's exclusive to Regal in theaters. Maybe if it doesn't work out in the first quarter, they get the HBO Max thing going again or something. I don't know. It's a weird deal though.
Yeah, I don't know. We thought the whole first deal was weird. This seems stranger and less good. I don't know. Whatever. I don't think I'm going to go be seeing any movies at Ameristar, but if I have to go there to see Dune 2, I'm going to go there to see Dune 2. So
there you go. Fair enough. All right. What do we got?
All right. Coming up next. This is the first time you and I have talked since WandaVision ended.
Mm-hmm.
So spoiler alert ahead. We're going to talk about it. Just tune out if you don't want the spoilers. Hopefully everyone has seen it by now. The series ended with a lot happening and clearly set up like a Doctor Strange movie, because we knew that was kind of rolling into it.
Right.
Final, after having now seen the whole arc of the story, having seen everything that happened, your finest honest opinion, was it good? Was it bad? Was it amazing? I mean, this is MCU's first television show on Disney Plus. How do you feel about it?
I think this is going to be our first big disagreement on Versus, Tyler, because we were already trending that way with this anyways. I'm going to tell you, I was underwhelmed with the whole first season of WandaVision. I liked certain pieces of it. I liked that we got White Vision, that we got a little bit of clarity on Vision, but there's still a lot to go there. I like the Agnes twist, the Agatha twist, right? I love that even though we originally knew it was setting up for Doctor Strange, but then with all the schedule changes, it was a question that they definitely made it clear at the end there. But overall, I felt like, seriously, we're letting her off. Like, she just imprisoned a whole town, but she's a hero. We played up on some of the tropes with some of the characters, and I just felt like we spent all of this buildup for a decent finale. The finale itself, I rather felt was pretty good, but it was all of this buildup for a finale that just wasn't enough for me. I just was underwhelmed. I was unimpressed.
Okay. I will concede that I wish there had been a little bit more happening. I get that with the way it ended, I get that like she got off, that's upsetting, but my concerns with the finale had more to do with like all these new characters we got introduced to got kind of pushed to the sidelines for basically, we had this very interesting examination of this weird kind of trippy stuff with the really clever ideas with the sitcoms and like her dealing with her grief, and then it turned into a set piece where we watch CGI characters bang into each other for 15 minutes. But my I guess I would say, are you saying that you were underwhelmed by the finale, or are you now taking the finale as the show is a loss as a whole now?
I don't want to say it's a loss, but I am as a whole first season.
Because I was not impressed. Everything up to that point was amazing. Like, I get that like a bad finale can kind of sour you on the whole show, but like those first two or three episodes are so good.
I don't know. I felt like it was a strikeout.
I don't know. The craft that was it went into them just like replicating that world, replicating those sitcoms, doing all the work, the cameras, the way they did all the fun. I mean, like the writing for it. I enjoyed pretty much everything about the show. I will admit that the end was a little bit disappointing, but not disappointing in a way that like they didn't earn it. Like, I think the ending makes perfect sense. I just think they definitely were left holding the bag with some of their characters. Like between Monica's character, Darcy's character, and Jimmy's character, like they were all set up to have like, and they, none of them really had their moment at the end. I mean, Monica's one moment is like, at one point, the bad guy, Tyler, straight shoots at a bunch of kids for no apparent reason other than, oh, we have to show people that Monica has powers now. Like, that was one of those things where it's just like, did he literally just do that so that we could make sure that people knew that, oh, no, she, her eyes don't just glow. She like has magic power, like superpowers now. I don't know. I was okay with the arc as a whole. I definitely understand your concerns with the finale, but I still think the show was a big success. I will say that I think it suffered from weird COVID scheduling things. This was not supposed to come out before Winter Soldier and the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. This was supposed to be the second show, and it's a little bit more experimental. It's doing some different things, whereas, at least from the first episode, Falcon and Winter Soldier looks like it's going to be a straightforward action-adventure by the numbers. Like, not in a bad way, but like it's telling one very specific type of story, whereas this is a little bit more ephemeral and weird. I'm going to be curious after Falcon and Winter Soldier is over whether or not, had they been in their original order, if it would have worked better for Marvel.
That's fair. And I get what you're saying about the craft of it, but to use as an example, I respect the hell out of Scream, what Wes Craven did to the teen horror genre, the meta-ness of it and all that stuff. But as a movie overall, it's not a, like, I don't like that movie, you know, and that's kind of how I feel.
Now you're saying stupid things. That movie's amazing. You can shit on every of the Scream sequels, but Scream the original is a fantastic film.
But that's my point, is how I feel like I do agree with you. I really enjoyed what they did, especially early on with the craft of WandaVision, of the set, like you said, the sets down to the camera pieces, they made sure they replicated those. It wasn't just a, oh, look, it's in black and white, and we did the intro to make you realize it. Like, we set everything. Yes.
It's a three camera sitcom. And then when things get weird, then all of a sudden it's handheld, zoom in, wide shot. I mean, and it was good. I think there was not a bad episode until the last two.
I wasn't overly impressed. I feel like MCU didn't do great with the prestige. There you go.
Perfect. I need comments to like let Iggy know that he is wrong on this one.
We needed stuff to disagree on, so we might continue to disagree as we continue to talk MCU shows. So also spoilers, we are going to talk the first episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. This one a little more recent, by as in just under a week. Basically, it aired. It's huge, huge opening, biggest opening to date on Disney Plus, bigger than Mandalorian, even Mandalorian season 2's opening, bigger opening than WandaVision, bigger than WandaVision's finale, biggest weekend opening for an episode on Disney Plus. But it's only going to be 6 episodes, by the way, too. Was it a good first episode to set up a 6-part arc?
Yes and no. I would say that first opening sequence is one of the most exciting action sequences that's been in a Marvel movie, period. Because I think some of the later Marvel movies have gotten a little over, like, that sequence. It does two awesome things. First of all, it like establishes, you know, what Sam's been up to, shows Sam as a solo badass. Also, finally gives Bartok the Leaper his due. He gets to come back for Winter Soldier and like, he doesn't leap and kick people. He just leaps out of planes and does cool things with wingsuits, and it's fucking awesome. But it definitely got a little bit bogged down. It gets a little bit bogged down in the past, I would say. Like, I get that Captain America, the blip, it all like hangs heavy over this, but we got a little, it felt a little, after that initial sequence and then the introduction of the two characters, it definitely felt like it dragged. The problem was, is it is a longer, and I, like I said, a more straightforward story than when we got with WandaVision. So they're definitely like going by the numbers, which is not a bad thing. Like, you look at something like the Winter Soldier movie, it was like a straight up like 80s spy thriller by the numbers, like hit, these are the beats you hit, here are these notes you hit. And you can do that well as long as you execute it well. I definitely felt like, as much as we complain about like some of these episodes of The Mandalorian are too short, or some of these episodes of this are too long and too many episodes, I like that it's only 6 episodes. I like that they're willing to go as long as short as they were, but there was almost too much in this one before they established like what we're going to do. Like,
right.
I, if you're only going to do 6 episodes, you need to get the story moving a little bit quicker then. And a lot of like the story beats were exposition drops. Like, you have this really cool first opening sequence, and then all the like story exposition is dropped by like him and a guy sitting at a table while he like fiddles with the thing, and the guy like basically just vomits like exposition of what's happening in the world on him. Like, oh, there's this group and they're doing these things. And like, I was like, that's just lazy writing. So I don't know. I'm 100% on board with the show. The production value is insanely high. I love both of the actors and I'm along for the ride, but I definitely am less excited having seen this for the rest of this show than I was after the first episode of WandaVision, which you obviously, I don't know. How do you feel?
You bring up a good point when we were discussing WandaVision about this was supposed to be the first series, because Spider-Man, the Spider-Man sequel went heavy into the blip, and they even warned us ahead like the weeks coming up before this drop, that it is going to focus heavy on that blip piece. And I think if you get this maybe 6 months ago, while the movies are still going to drop this year, you know, we've had the little Black Widow prequel in between under normal schedule, I feel better about that. But I'm going to kind of agree with you. It's in very different than Wonder Woman 84, but the way I'm going to compare it is that you get this opening sequence that's long and fantastic, and then the rest of the episode, or in Wonder Woman's case, movie, it just never hits that point again. I just never felt that good about it again. I was excited. I'm in this one. I was reading about how it's going to be John Wick style action, and then I see a half a minute scene and I'm like, oh, because they're going to do the combat. They don't mean that it's going to be filled with action from end to end. And I agree. I just feel like we spent too much time talking about, we got it. We got it. That's the guy of the, you know, his son's the one the Winter Soldier killed. We got it. Your family's losing the boat and the home and everything. Like, we just spent way too much time. And maybe it was just because in the back of my head, I'm thinking, you got 6 hours, and we're putting a whole hour in this, and our guys haven't even come together yet. I don't know. And where's Baron? Like, the whole Baron Zemo's 90% of the reason I'm on board for this, with that bringing the mask and everything, wasn't even there in the first one. But you're right. You did get some good callbacks in the opening. And really interesting kind of to that other villain. I don't know if he's a Marvel villain that I just am not aware of, but you do get kind of alluded to with that like terrorist group, that villain that just throws that guy down.
So Flag Smasher is definitely a Marvel character.
So that was Flag Smasher?
Well, they're calling the group the Flag Smashers, but there is a character in Marvel who's called Flag Smasher, who's an anarchist. These people are definitely not trying to vilify, like, which goes a weird way. These don't seem to be anarchists. They're people who believe the world was better with that. I don't know. It's
right.
It's not super well defined yet, but like Flag Smasher is a character in, it's been multiple characters in Marvel.
Okay, I didn't connect the two dots. I didn't remember the name of the group, to be honest, but I don't know. All right.
Yeah. Well, it was one scene where they're drinking tea and it's like a whole, like I said, it was just a weird exposition drop and I wasn't super into it, but it is what it is. I believe that it could end up being great. I'm excited. I'm going to watch it. It's not like I'm not going to watch the rest of them. So.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely be there. Okay. Well, that's it for our big topics. Let's head on over to quick hits. This is the part where we
quick hits.
All right. You want to get us started with some quick hits?
Let's do it. On the heels, Google closed Stadia Studios, which I think everyone saw coming. Amazon is now opening a game studio in Montreal. Amazon's been talking about making games, has been actually working on an MMO for what seems like a million years, and no one's ever seen light or hair of it. Is this another big company that's just going to bust in the gaming scene and see success, or is this just another, like, what's a countdown to have to lay all these people off?
I don't know, because I felt like if any one of these big companies could do it, it would have been Google. Maybe we'll get a surprise twist ending here at the end, and it'll be Elon Musk who gives us a gaming company that works. I just don't see Amazon. I don't feel like any of these companies are committing long enough because they're not seeing such a quick enough return on rate. So I think they'll bail as well. Yeah. What about you?
Well, and I mean, we're seeing even like the big studios like Activision and Blizzard laying people off left and right. Like, right. COVID was rough on this, working from home was stuff on this. But like you said, companies are all about growth and hitting it big and hitting the numbers big. Like, you have to understand, like, back in the day, like, gaming companies were around for 15, 20 years before they had their big hit, you know, like, or would work on a single game for however. But I don't know if you follow Jason Schreier or anyone else, like, there's a lot of things in the way the gaming industry works that need to change. And if they don't, we're going to keep seeing layoffs and closures of studios left and right. I don't know that this is the business you want to get into, but if you got Amazon money, why not? So,
right. Well, in comic news, and we'll talk DC a couple times in these quick hits, but the first thing is in the Batman comics, you got Nightwing, who founded Three-Legged Stray. It's kind of going to be his little sidekick. Guess what, fans? You get to vote on the name. We've got Haley, Shadow, Blue, and Hope. What name are you going with, Tyler?
Obviously Blue. Like
Blue? Oh, okay. I was going to go Shadow.
Nah, Blue.
All right.
Burr, burr, burr. All right. So the new rumor is, apparently the rumors came out a couple nights ago that Discord was looking to possibly make a deal and sell themselves to a bigger company. A few hours later, a rumor came out that the big name in the group, that the big name looking to actually buy them, was Microsoft. Is it worth the cost? And is this RIP Discord? Is it going the way of Skype, or would this be a good thing?
We're talking billions of dollars, and I can see Microsoft wanting it because I didn't know this. I still don't know to the extent of this Discord world that people are in just engulfed in.
I live in Discord. That's the
that's what I'm saying. People live there.
It's the only chat app I use anymore. It's great. It's basically Slack for gamers. It's Slack. Right. It's got IRC functionality with ads and threads and channels, but it also has built-in voice chat and video streaming. It's awesome. And if Microsoft buys it, it will, I assume, cease to be good. So
that's where I was going. I'm agree with you on that one. If you want it to not be what it is anymore, let Microsoft put their hands on it. All right.
Remember when Skype was what? How did Skype somehow not be the how do you fuck up so bad?
It's a global 2020.
In 2020 and Skype is nowhere to be found.
Jeez. Right, for sure. All right. You had a huge purchase, but Bethesda was picked up by Microsoft as well. So speaking of, this has been a little while. They dropped it immediately, their games on the Xbox Play Pass, or I can't remember the exact word of what it's called.
Game Pass.
Yeah, it is Game Pass. Okay. People haven't stopped talking about in the gaming community. Is this going to inspire Sony to make a big play, big purchase, or Sony feel like they already got a good stable of exclusive titles?
I mean, Sony's calling card for the last generation has been exclusive. Like, they've won the exclusive battle over Microsoft year in and year out, but it's specifically console exclusives. Bethesda and Microsoft really cashes in on that. Game Pass is really only worth it if you're going to PC it. I mean, Sony has this version. They have the PlayStation Plus pass where you get free games every month. I don't know. Right. I think if Sony stays the course, they're in good shape. Microsoft is finally starting to gain ground, but it's because of the PC space, not because of the console game. I would say.
And I also see Sony is making the moves. So I'm a big fan of the sports games, and obviously MLB The Show is going to be on both systems now, and there's talks of other Sony games. So to me, they're looking like they're going to spend money to not be exclusive, because then they'll make that money. There we go. All right. What's next?
All right. Another DC one. DC heavy today. But DC has announced that flagship comic books will now be $6 an issue. Is this the beginning of the end of physical comics from DC? I mean, DC has flirted with getting out of the physical comics game forever between the Diamond stuff and the multiple reboots. Is this the beginning of the end? Or are people going to pay $6 for a paper? I mean, for a trade?
I think it is the beginning of the end, but I also think with what we've talked about for years now, what Warner Brothers doesn't know what to do with DC, this is a smart move because it's a money-losing business. And we've talked about how Disney is happy to lose that money to set up Marvel stuff. Warner Brothers is not for DC. So if they charge $6 and people pay it, okay, it's starting to cover more costs. If they don't pay it, you have a better excuse to say sales are down. Let's quit printing these. I'm pretty sure. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, first of all, like, is there any, I mean, inflation's been big over the last 20 years. Is there anything that's inflated as fast as these? Like, I mean, we're not young, but we're also not old, but I remember buying comic books for like $1.50.
Right. I feel like $1.99 to $2.99 for the fancier ones, like, were our 90s.
I remember when like it was expensive to buy an annual for $4.99. Like a big thick annual for $4.99 was like, wow, $5. I don't know if I really need this.
I think $6 for a
monthly issue is rough.
Right. I think at the very least you get two trades collected a year of six issues. That ends up being $20. I mean, just wait for the trade. Like, it's,
I'm
you might
definitely
as well
wait for the trade.
Right.
All right. I know $6 is like, that's half my Netflix for one issue.
Right. Exactly. And you get, and for those that don't read DC Comics, let us not forget, if you collect Batman, you collect 3 to 4 different series every month because the story goes across them. So you're talking $18 to $24 a month for one character.
Just to keep up with Batman. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
All right. And DCEU, we brought it up at the beginning. Are you happy about this, you know, the casting of Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Fate? First going to premiere in Black Adam, likely going to stick around with all the Justice Society stuff.
Yes, because I love Dr. Fate and I love Pierce Brosnan. I think you're burying the better casting news, though, in that we finally have a villain for Shazam #2, and it's Helen Mirren.
I'm
so excited about that.
Fair. That's very fair.
Pierce Brosnan's right here. Helen Mirren's just a little bit higher, though.
You're right. You're right. You got me there. You got me. Helen Mirren's definitely better. But yes, also.
Both of these castings are pretty exciting.
Right. Awesome. Well, before we move on, you know, obviously somber news in the world right now. So we just put it at the bottom of the screen. Head on over to stopaapihate.org to learn more about stopping Asian hate and how you can help by donating money, time, anything else. Obviously, all the communities, geek community crosses across everybody. And we're used, as we said, as we were younger, we were the outsiders and everything like that. So bullying, hate, all that shit. Let's get it out of here. Let's move on and make it better for everybody. All right, Tyler, that's it for this episode of Versus. We had a couple disagreements in there.
I think we're finally getting the hang of it. We'll find some good ones.
We'll find some good ones soon.
We're going to find some things to disagree with soon. I feel it. There we go. I thought WandaVision was great. You're wrong. So there it is.
It was underwhelming is the word I'm going
with. You're underwhelming.
That's fair. Well, there's always more Versus ahead. You can also join us next week for our special anniversary episode of The Last Word, where Tyler and myself will be competing with Gallo and D for the most seniored or tenured Project Nerd team members to celebrate our 9th anniversary that's happening this month. So looking forward to that. You can check it out right here on the same podcast feed, same website and Project Nerd, and obviously video for that as well. But if you're looking for any of the other Project Nerd podcasts, obviously Project Unreal, the Nerdcast, I'm Not Famous, many of the other ones right here, just go to search, go wherever you go, listen to podcasts and search Project Nerd Podcast, or just head on over to projectnerd.com/podcast. That's project-nerd.com/podcast.
There it is.
Too much.
project-nerd.com/podcast.
There we go. We're going to have to split that up in the future.
Is it podcasts or is it podcasts?
It's plural. It's plural.
project-nerd.com/podcasts.
Or just go to projectnerd.com and click on that very first navigation button.
It's literally the first button. It's the first thing you can click on.
That's what we celebrate. All right. Till next time, Tyler. That's it for Versus.